This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with a few of the members of the Game Brass. John Robert Matz, who's the trumpeter, Robbie Duguay, who's the trumpeter and flugelhorn, Daniel Ronberger, who's the trombonist, their arranger, Thomas Kresge, and John Stacey, French horn. And I'll just say a great big group hi. It's really cool to have all you guys here.
Hi.
Hello.
And the other members who aren't here who are regularly performing with the Game Brass are Danny Flam, French horn, and Alex Hill, tuba. And you guys have a new album out called Brassylvania, and it's this collection of just some of the best music from horrifying video games and scary music on its own. And so, first of all, I'm absolutely floored. And we talked less than a year ago about your first release, which was a wintertime Snowtopia. And so I can't even imagine how busy you guys have all been working on yet another album that you released less than a year later. So I don't know who wants to take the lead here, but I'd love to know how you guys pulled this off together so quickly.
Thomas, I think you should probably take that.
I don't know how we did it. I feel like I always had this in mind to do since after Snowtopia. But, and in fact, when I looked at my folder, like it said, the folder for this was created back in like November.
Wow.
So I guess I had the plan for like a year at least. So, I mean, I don't know. We turned Snowtopia around in like 2 or 3 months. So this one we had about twice as much time.
Wow.
And there are twice as many tracks.
Yeah. And almost twice as many people.
Twice as many people, yeah.
But I don't know. I guess we just had a good enough system in place to get things done. We had a lot of pretty specific deadlines for each track. We just planned it all right and came through.
Yeah, well, speaking of all the extra people, I mean, you've added like 9 extra brass players and then all the other musicians too. So, I mean, we can go one by one. I know, John, you weren't part of the Snowtopia release, but how did you get roped into this?
Basically, Magfest 2 years ago, I played with them for some live things at Magfest. And then gradually I was just kind of incorporated. We did a sextet for this album. Okay, can you play second horn on that? And then later on it's like, all right, we're going to expand. And then I got added in that way. So it was just kind of a by proxy and then eventually by osmosis, I guess.
Well, the thing that has astonished me with Snowtopia and also with this release is it really sounds like you guys are all in the same studio jamming, just, you know, like having fun all together, and yet you're scattered all over the country. So how do you guys all make that happen?
That's an interesting process that we've kind of like honed over several years of practice. But it starts off with the arrangements, and you know, we sit down, and when the arrangement's done being written, we'll generate MIDI data for it, and we'll export a tempo map from that, build a click track for that, a metronome click, so that everyone will start off recording to that click track. So we have synchronized tempo pretty much up front. And then it is a process after that. Like, once we have the raw recordings in, there'll be a lot of tweaking and cleanup and work with various plugins like Melodyne to kind of finesse the timing, because no matter how good the raw performances are, you have to do some unifying that you would do naturally when you're in the same room. But like when we play at Magfest or other conventions and stuff, like we glue together very naturally. But when you're recording independently, you have to kind of tweak it in post. And then after that, it goes over to Robbie and to Thomas, who go and sit down and do all the fancy mixing and processing, et cetera, to give us like unified reverb across players in different, you know, that were recorded in different rooms on different microphones and different instruments, etc., to make us all sound unified. It's a process, but it's one that we've honed to a point where I think it's almost imperceptible that we are not all together.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been listening really carefully, and it's been really fun because I've been driving around listening in my car, and they take Halloween really seriously here in Connecticut, and so people decorate their yards, and it's really elaborate, and it's just so much fun to listen to this music from, like, Luigi's Mansion and Celeste and Castlevania, driving around with people's, you know, Halloween lawn ornaments and stuff, and so it's really fun. But I've noticed that the quality of the sound is so uniform across all of the, you know, the disparate recordings that you guys have all sent. So Thomas and Robbie, wow, congratulations. It's just phenomenal.
Well, thanks very much. I mean, and there are a few more steps that are sort of, you know, along the way, sort of earlier on from the mixing as well. As we continue to record together more and more often, we adjust the way that we mic ourselves. And if someone records first, then we'll drop that on our timeline and try and match the other person's performance. So, I mean, everyone kind of adds their own, you know, effort to trying to make us unified. And I think just it's been the years of practice of doing it that have gotten us to this point so far.
Yeah. Well, how did you guys all decide what even to put on the album? Because there's a lot of tracks on here, and it's such a great mix of, you know, seriously spooky tracks from terrifying games, and yet you've kind of lightened it up because there are some really wonderful kind of lighter tracks that happen in these really scary games. So was it like a kind of democratic process to, you know, everybody gets a vote and everybody chooses their favorites and then you weed them out from there?
Eventually. I mean, there's like a giant list that the Game Brass keeps of just songs they may be interested in having arranged at one point. One of those tabs was for specifically scary songs. And so I kind of pulled from there first and just made up a list that originally had, I think, like 16 tracks or so. When I first actually thought of the album, it was a lot more, I was conceiving it as being a lot scarier throughout or darker. And so originally I had a few more tracks on there that were a lot like more, I guess, traditional horror sounding music, stuff like that. And I didn't want it to sound too upbeat. Like, I kind of imagined you could play it on Halloween, I don't know, on your porch, then it would actually sound scary. So I was leaning away from too much of the sillier Halloween stuff. But then that became too hard to do because there's too much good choices that are like that. And like halfway through the process, I kind of asked around what people maybe wanted specifically. There were special requests. And so like five more tracks were added that way and some were taken off.
Well, I love what you did with Luigi's Mansion because you've got all of those fun little effects in there. And it's just, I mean, it's kind of a classic. I mean, you couldn't leave that one out, right?
Yeah, Luigi's Mansion was an auto-include. That was my feature. I played. Thomas had a really creative concept of like me being Luigi and going and exploring around the mansion and getting scared by ghosts because that's what Luigi does best. So then, also on that track, I did whistling because Luigi actually does whistle the main theme in game and he's just like scared and nervous. And then I also played theremin, which is an instrument, it's an electronic instrument, one of the first electronic instruments to be created, and one of the only instruments, period, to be played without physical contact. And it just so happened that I played it, and that helped add that extra horror, creepy flair.
Yeah, well, theremin, I mean, that's like the go-to instrument for scary, scary stuff. Elmer Bernstein used it in Ghostbusters. And
yes.
There's something really eerie about it. But yeah, the whistling, Danny, that was just so cool. And the, you know, going back to the idea that not every single track on the album is terrifying, Life is Beautiful from Deadly Premonition is another one. It's surprisingly jaunty. And
yeah, I kind of pushed for that one because at the time when we were looking through the list, we have it divided into the categories for like the absolute scary ones versus the ones that are more jazzy and the ones that are slightly more upbeat. And then I noticed it's like, hey, we don't have anything that's actually major in here. I want to put this theme on and it'll have something completely different, something major. And it's also from Deadly Premonition, which is one of my favorite delightful B-movie games. I love the theme so much and I'm happy that Thomas included it.
Whistling is phenomenal. I mean, that's got to be hard to do, right? Or maybe not if you're a brass player. I don't know.
Honestly, I have no idea how I do it, but I like doing it. I probably annoyed everyone for like the past 10 plus years.
It's such a cultured tone, though. You've got like a nice vibrato going, and I don't know. I mean, like, whistling is so different than playing a brass instrument. I think this is just your natural ability there, Daniel. Just like, it's that very, very elegant whistling tone. Just make sure to hire you whenever we need to do any whistling going forward.
Yeah,
please.
Well, you might find.
I would love to whistle on the sequel to Deadly Premonition. Nothing more. Just throwing that out there. Just throwing that out there.
Well, John, you got a chance to sing too with the incredible track from Amnesia. and the Lux Tenebras, and that was, it's just terrifying. I mean, speaking of, you know, terrifying tracks.
Yeah, no, that's a terrifying thing. Getting into the right mindset to sing it was interesting. And like trying to get this, kind of splitting this difference between like a more cultured operatic tone and like the tortured souls of the damned, being personified by me, a tortured soul myself, you know, and then putting that into voice, was rather exciting. It's a real like haunting piece of music. Like the original piece is amazing. And Thomas did a fantastic job like adapting that for voice. I love the fact it showed up. I'm just like going through the music and I turn to this one and just, there's this tenor solo. And I'm like, who's singing this? Who's singing? Who? And he's like, oh, you are. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. No problem. No problem. I, you know, don't tell me these things. It's fine. Yeah. And so
from the beginning, I wanted at least one track where we had some operatic singing. I thought it would.
I loved it. It was
and
great.
And I just ended up where I thought it would fit.
It was great. It was the fact that it was just like, it was a surprise. Left field. There you go. Now we're going to sing this. But it was just a great piece. And I was a blast to sing. Hopefully the tortured, tormented sound is conveyed adequately, you know, in the final recording.
Oh yeah, well it helps that it's in Latin right off the bat because that lends a kind of a tone and a weight and a creepiness like right off the bat. So
yeah, obviously, I mean that's what they say. It's like, yeah, Latin, you know, that's the optimal language for, you know, conjuring demons and, you know, expressing, you know, eternal damnation. You know, it's perfect. It's really everything you need. It works flawlessly.
I was really pleased to see Lavender Town from Pokemon in there, too, because, I mean, that's a piece that has given kids nightmares since they were little. And it was really great to include. So whose pick was that one?
That was another auto-include.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the most terrifying piece on the album, let's be honest.
Yeah, oh yeah, it is.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, Thomas, what I love about it is, you know, with a lot of these tracks from the games, the cues from the games, they're very, very short. And what you've done with them to expand them is really wonderful, because they have a beginning and a middle and an end. And so what's your process to take these, you know, little stems or tiny cues and then write a whole piece to expand them?
I mean, that one in particular is actually a medley. It's got two tracks from Pokemon. And because I didn't think I could do enough with, like, the 30 seconds that originally existed. So I had to add another one. I don't know. For other things, it just kind of depends. Like, sometimes I'll strip away and just make it the melody and then act like I'm composing with the melody someone else gave me. And then kind of be a little more free at that point if I don't know what else to do. From the beginning, I usually still like to... I guess I have two goals in mind when writing any of these. And one of them is to still make it feel like it's in the spirit of the original. Like, I don't like usually taking enormous different tangents away from the original, but I also don't want it to just be the original, because then I don't think it has a reason to exist. So it's just balancing, like, I want somebody to hear it and know and feel like they're still hearing the same piece, but that it's a new version of it, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you've been arranging for the Game Brass now for a while, and so John Robert and Danny and Robbie, I'm wondering, you know, how much input do you have when you get the parts from Thomas? You know, I know you guys all work really closely together now, but if you get something that you think you can do more with, I mean, is it like really democratic and you're able to just sort of run with it?
No, he definitely gives us a lot of leeway and a lot of control. So, like, some members in the band, not to be remaining nameless, have a lot of really honestly good and valid suggestions for the pieces, and sometimes that will expand into, you know, a larger, cooler part that maybe Thomas hadn't originally conceived of. And I mean, that's reasonable given, you know, this album has 22 tracks on it. For instance, Spirit of Hospitality, which Thomas made into this sort of interesting tuba concerto thing, we got to the end of it and John Robert said, you know, what if he just had this really cool cadenza? And so then Alex went and composed this, like, really great sounding, amazing ending to the piece, but that ended up changing. A lot of us had already recorded our parts. It ended up changing the entire end of the piece in a really cool and new way. Thank you. So I think, yeah, Thomas is really flexible with us as an arranger. And, you know, out of the gate, they're amazing arrangements, and he does a great job of highlighting each one of us in our strengths. And for some of us, myself, our weaknesses. And, I mean, I'm not like a very strong high player, so he'll always give me the lower parts, right? But anyway, yeah, he does a great job of highlighting that and then being flexible with us when we want to, you know, expand or retract parts.
Yeah, because what it sounds like when I'm just listening to the tracks on the soundtrack is it sounds like you guys had a lot of freedom and you're just kind of jamming and doing a little improv and stuff, but maybe that's not the case.
Some of it is. I mean, from I like getting suggestions from people because it makes the writing easier, because then I have an idea of where to go. Like Robbie specifically wanted to play more flugelhorn, so that shows up on two or three tracks. John Stacy told me that he specializes in playing low horn parts, which is something I'd never really written before, so a lot of that shows up. And, like, yeah, there are actual improvised parts, so, like, the biggest improvised part's probably in the DuckTales piece. Danny Flams, like, runs a jazz band, and so I just gave him a long solo, which is also easy to arrange because I don't have to write anything.
So that's, yeah, big that, shout that out to Danny Flame because he really nails that.
Oh, so good.
That also happened to be the piece that he specifically requested in Transylvania.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I love how you brought in some non-brass players, too. There's a guitar and a sax, and they really add a lot. I mean, not that you guys are great, but it's kind of nice to have, you know, the instrumentation kind of varied a little bit. So how did you find these other artists who performed on the album with you?
Well, that was another request. Robbie plays guitar.
Yeah, guitar is my main instrument.
And I grew up as a saxophone player. Just thought maybe I'll throw that in for variety.
Yeah, we had to find a way to include actually Thomas, you know, playing something after all of his hard work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, John, when you first became part of the group, did you have any idea how deep in and embedded you were going to be with this group?
No, but it was kind of like a thing that it's like I made friends with these guys, and so I was like, for the most part, Game Brass is pretty cool, but I'm happy being friends with them. I'm happy talking with them, and I'm really grateful that they welcomed me in and asked me to do things. But at the beginning, it was kind of like I'll play as needed, kind of a thing. And if they ask me to do more, that's wonderful. But it's like, these guys are cool. So if I can just be friends with them, that'd be we can go from there, kind of a thing. So.
Well, and it just what comes across, obviously talking to you guys, but then also listening to the albums, is the rapport that you guys all have. And how often do you get together to like talk about stuff and plan things out?
We talk all the time. We have a Slack channel that is mostly like the Game Brass, but then also people who have collaborated with us and other friends that we know from other places, sometimes people who have also arranged music from us. And there are discussions going on in our channels all the time. Some of them are about the projects that we do, but then others are just like cool brass related things that we find, or cool random memes and video game clips and stuff that we find. So it really is a friendly atmosphere and helps us play better together as an ensemble too, I think.
Yeah, I'll bet. And just the way that you guys kind of weave everything together is really, really cool to listen to. And one of the tracks on the album that I was really pleased to see is Laura's theme from Silent Hill 2. And what's so interesting about it, when you hear it in the game, that's a weird thing about the Silent Hill games with the music, because the music isn't nearly as terrifying as the games. And this, that effect of like dragging chains and stuff, it's like, Pyramid Head is right around the corner. so like I love that touch. I love the chains right at the beginning of the track. That's a really, really cool effect. So Thomas, was that your idea, the chains?
That's kind of copied from one of the tracks. I mean, it's got a pretty industrial soundtrack, and there's a kind of a track I'm referencing at the beginning where that's actually happening. So I kind of just tried to recreate it.
Thank you. Well, let's talk about the Grim Fandango suite too, because that is just phenomenal. And so you guys roped in the mariachi entertainment systems group for that, right?
Right. So that was actually the very last bit of music that we added to the album. John is silently laughing to himself because we were done the album, air quotes, we were done the album. And we started talking about, you know, what's missing from this album? Oh, well, you know, how are we doing this without including Grim Fandango? We have all these cool ghosts and skeletons. Hang on, skeletons? Grim, we have this. So then we all sort of felt like sad. The Grim Fandango soundtrack is just so fantastic and so deep and rich. How could we just do the main theme or, you know, Manny and Meche or whatever? Like, you have to do it justice. So it turned into a big 5-track suite. And then I sort of said, I don't think we can do this justice with the mariachi style that it needs. Who better to include than Mariachi Entertainment System?
We had known Mariachi Entertainment System for a little while, and they had known us ever since Snowtopia. They commented on our things before, so it was really nice to have an opportunity to collaborate with them. And I really think that their abilities absolutely made the most out of this opportunity and this track.
Yeah, because it's a very distinctive style that maybe you guys, John Robert and Robbie, maybe you don't play in very often. And what I love about their performance is that it's not over the top. It's not a parody of like the mariachi style.
And that was one of the dangers going into it, right? I mean, like John Robert and then Ken Crouch, second trumpet, are both phenomenal players. We can kind of mimic what the sound is, but it would not have come across as authentic. So David Ortiz, who plays trumpet in Mariachi Entertainment System, it's not that he's trying to put on the mariachi sound. He's a mariachi player.
Probably, I mean, honestly, like, just amazing tone. Like, is that that pure operatic vibrato that you want to hear out of that kind of trumpet playing? And it's just he does it effortlessly. It's second nature to him, and it's like it's something that you try to cultivate, but it takes a lifetime to really do it well. And so we did our best to back him up, and just it's a wonderful feature for those folks. Like, just definitely, they did an amazing job, and I'm so glad it happened. I like made this offhand comment. It was like, you know what we should do something from Grim Fandango. It's really great, you know, it kind of sort of related, kind of maybe. And then Thomas is like, why did you do this? And then suddenly we were doing a multi-movement suite, and we were doomed. But it's so good. It's so good. It turned out so well. Perfect. I mean, you know, Day of the Dead, the day after Halloween, why not? And so it was just so much fun to see you guys performing at MAGFest last year. And so do you have plans to perform together again anytime soon?
MAGFest this coming year.
Awesome.
Exactly in what capacity is yet to be seen, but pretty much all of the core ensemble will be there, and most of the extended ensemble for Brasylvania will be there. So we're going to try to make something happen.
Oh, that'll be so much fun. And I'm sure, I remember at the performance last year, Danny had to swap out because, yeah, it's hard to play brass instruments for that length of time. So it's great that you're bringing, like, you know, emergency backup to to kind of fill in the gaps. So that's really
good. Yeah, it's super important. And I mean, even for myself, I had to swap out a couple times. Planning for that just because of endurance is huge. So yeah, having auxiliary players and all of us sort of being multi-instrumentalists also helps in a big way. I should say all of the brass players we had on the album. On first trumpet, we have John Robert Matz. Second trumpet, Ken Crouch. He's also known as Hat. Third trumpet, myself, Robbie Duguay. First horn, Marc Papagain from France. Second horn, we have Jordan Moore joining us from Rochester. Third horn, Mr. John Stacey, taking up all the super low horn notes. First trombone, Danny Romberger. Second trombone, Danny Flam. And tuba, our bass boy, Alex Hill.
Danny Flam is normally our horn player for the quintet, but since we expanded it to the nine-piece ensemble, he was able to play his main instrument, trombone, as well.
Wow. I'm just picturing all of you on stage at once. It just would be very, very cool. So,
be very loud.
Yeah, and very loud, too. So what else have you got in the pipeline, you know, down the road? Another album?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, when we started the project, it was about 2.5 years ago. We had set out to do an album of castle themes. So part of sort of designing albums, I like to pick a theme, but then try and find a variety of games and a variety of styles and, you know, moods that we can pull from to make that an actual album work, like a bigger thing. So we started recording castles back in 2017. We're finally done, fingers crossed, all the tracks we wanted to get onto that. Anything past this goes on to Castles 2. Forget it. We're not doing it. So, yeah, we're in the mixing stages of that. So it should be out early next year. If we can have it with us for MAGFest, we will. But, I mean, you know, no promises at this point. And then we have at least two other projects that we are discussing and arranging at this point that will be for 2020 as well.
Wow. You guys just never stop. I mean,
that's the problem.
Yeah. When we started this in 2017, the promise was kind of, we're going to do one track a month and that'll keep us under a reasonable schedule because everyone is busy and has lives. But the reception to what we do has been truly phenomenal. I'm happy that there are so many people that might not have interacted with classical music, might not have interacted with video game music before, that are now our fans. And then it's because of having a lot of support and having a lot of good chemistry as an ensemble that we're able to keep on going and building more and bigger and crazier projects.
Well, it's amazing. I don't know another ensemble like you guys. And yeah, you really are sort of at the crossroads of classical and game music. So it's such a great sound. And I can totally see how you've got, you know, so many subscribers and like a big fan base now.
Yeah, it's been really overwhelming. We're very, very pleased. When we started out, we imagined this Venn diagram with two big circles of, you know, classical music or chamber music and then video game people and this tiny little sliver in the middle. But it turns out that if you sort of mix it up, you can actually get both the circles. So we've been very, very pleased to sort of expand our audience over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's been great. Well, John Robert and Robbie and Danny and Thomas and John, it's been so much fun to talk with all of you. And I really appreciate your time. And the album is just so much fun to listen to. And it's available on Bandcamp. And so thank you so much for taking some time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate having us.